this week's InterVarsity podcast, Jim Tebbe talks about the theological and biblical basis for Urbana. Jim Tebbe is InterVarsity's Vice President for Missions and the Director of Urbana 06. This talk was delivered in chapel at the National Service Center in March 2006.
The history of missions is really a history of students. Particularly recent history, you go back 500 years, and the big missionizers then were the Jesuits, and they were essentially university students. That's why there's so many Jesuit universities. They're big into academia. Go back 200 years for our own country, 200 years actually this August, and you get the Haystack Prayer Meeting and the Society of Brethren, a secret society that met on the campuses and spawned missionaries, Society of Brethren. Americans were the first SOB missionaries sent out around the world. Thanks. And then 100 years ago, we had the student volunteer movement, and they had 20,000 university students, mostly in America and Europe, signed a statement and said, if God wills, I'm going to be an American missionary, or I'm going to be a missionary. This quote I like from a missions historian, James Patterson. He says, few were more disappointed when the student volunteer movement derailed in the 1920s. Although the SVM eventually died as an organization, it could be argued that Wilder himself, Robert Wilder, who started it, in the 1930s, passed on the SVM torch to InterVarsity Fellowship and thus indirectly to Student Foreign Missions Fellowship and the Urbana Triennial Missionary Conventions. I really think when missions history is written, years down the road, Urbana is going to figure very prominently into global history of missions. Mm. And it's a real privilege to be part of this incredible convention. So Jim's going to share a bit about where we're at as we approach 06.
I think that I have to do a word of explanation for the title of this particular talk, Rip Van Winkle, A Visit to Urbana 06. I was trying to make it something other than the theological and biblical basis for changes to Urbana 06. And I think this could be misunderstood. As I was going out last night, Barb was closing up at the front desk, and she says, oh, by the way, I'm not going to be there tomorrow. Can you please tell me who Rip Van Winkle is? And so I started to tell the fairy tale. And she said, no, I know that is, but who is Rip Van Winkle referring to? Is it, you know, John Stott or a former Urbana director that's coming back to Urbana? And seeing the changes, it sounds a little derogatory. Well, if it refers to anyone, it refers to myself. I've been away from my culture. I'm wearing a pin here that Linda Dahl gave me just this morning. It says, Urbana 73 is coming. In my era was Urbana 67 and Urbana 70. I mean, it goes back. And if it's anything, it's like that, because when we went abroad, I worked to become something else in another culture, in another place. And when I came back into this culture, it was like 25 years of my life had been lost in between. And it was like Rip Van Winkle waking up and picking up the threads from my university days and those relationships and things, and then carrying them forward and putting them into where we are now. So if it's any Rip Van Winkle, it's myself sort of coming back into Urbana. But the point of this really is to look at a theological and biblical basis for some of the changes or some of the things that we're doing at Urbana. And there are lots of things, and there are lots of changes, and so there are lots of things that I could have said. And I thought, well, I'll restrict them to five, and then I thought, well, I'll restrict them to three. And then last night I thought, well, let's just keep it at two. And so there's going to be two things that I'm mentioning. And there's a lot more that's here, and the two changes that are coming to this Urbana, and why it is that we're doing them, and what is the biblical and theological basis for what it is that we're doing as we're looking at these changes. You have on your chair a couple of things here, in case you haven't seen them. This is the Urbana brochure. It's changed considerably because of what the web is going to be doing, is doing now, and the theme. You have a calling on it. The other is a thing that we used to call Urbana in Context, but now it's just Urbana Questions that's been here that you have. You're welcome to take these with you and read them and pass them on to friends and look at them. But if you're going to take them and throw them into the garbage, which I do with a lot of stuff that's given to me, bring them back or leave them on my desk or leave them here, because we will use these. We're not just, but you're welcome to keep them and put this up on your cube and pass these out to friends or keep them as reference. But if we're just going to throw them out, it'd be nice to have them, because we do pass them out to pastors and to other people. All right? Two big changes. When I was recruiting for Urbana 2003, I thought it would be a good idea to meet different people who represented constituencies and influences. And so I was in the Chicago area. I went to Wheaton College, and I met the president of Wheaton College there, Dwayne Lutfit. And he was kind enough to give me some time, and I went to talk with him about Urbana and then what we could do in terms of recruiting students from Wheaton College to go to Urbana, because a number of them I knew in the past had gone there. And in the course of our conversation, he was describing for me what he saw his job as at Wheaton College. He said, you know, to me, he said, Jim, he says, things are very different than when you and I were in college. I'd like to think he's a little older than I am, but when we were in college, he said that the environment in which our students live, even when they come from strong Christian homes, is very different. And like the fish in the sea, it influences them and affects them. And there's all sorts of issues that are there that weren't there before. I know that Don Fields has said to me, this isn't what Dwayne Lutfin said, but Don Fields said to me that during the time when he first began ministries, one of our old longtime staff members that has stuck with campus ministry and with mentoring young staff, he said that 80% of the students would come from what he would consider solid family homes, and 20% would be from dysfunctional homes. Now he said it's the opposite. 80% perhaps come from dysfunctional homes, and 20% come from homes where there's stability and continuity. And he said it has an effect on us. This is what Dwayne Lutfin was saying. And he says that students are starting much farther back than when we were starting in college, and we're trying to help them better understand their Christian faith and how to engage with this world. And it's not as good a job, he feels, as what might have been done some 20 or 25 years ago. And in many ways, that's a little bit what InterVarsity staff try to do as well. We're trying to do the same thing in slightly different ways as we work with students, see them come into faith, and then see them discipled, and see them engaged in the world in a significant way. Christianity was a majority culture at one time, but I think it's very helpful for us to remember with that came other baggage, with that came other issues and other things. And I won't go into them, but there were some real issues. And we look back to the old days and say, wouldn't it be better? But no, you know, there were some problems there. And we're engaged in culture wars now. And the question that I have is, can Christians ever win? Can Christians ever win those culture wars that are happening now? I mean, it's in the news media, and it's more and more secular, and there's less and less of a Christian expression that's in there. The Gallup polls that church attendance has held pretty consistently over the last decades at about 40%. But I was just reading a recent Christianity Today article, and it says that that may be suspect, and it may be as low as 20%, because Christians are better able to give themselves excused absences from church. You know, in other words, have you been to church in the last 7 days? They say, oh, yes. Well, they meant to be at church the last 7 days, but, you know, this came up and that came up, and it's an excused absence. And so, in fact, probably even church attendance has been significantly going down in our country at this time. The InterVarsity's purpose statements is to build witnessing communities, not to take over the university, but in our context to build witnessing communities in this culture, in this place, where as Christians we minister and we work. In Scripture, what is an image that fits such a community? What is an image for the church and for believers today? And I would like to suggest it's the community of God in exile. It's the community of God in exile. Similar to what you have in Jeremiah 29. You're hearing about this at the multi-ethnic conference, and Paul Tokunaga was speaking. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. And this is how we should live as a community of God in exile. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, and do not decrease. Also seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. And it's a model for ministry that we have, and it's a model for Christian community that we have. And we are in the university in order to have that, so that people can see. And we are to live and to thrive in the university. And then, of course, later on is that lovely verse in Jeremiah chapter 29. It's verse 11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and plans to give you a future. And it's a promise to us as the Church of God in the world today, the community of believers in the world today. Well, what are some of the characteristics of this exile community? It's smaller. It's purified. People who were the hangers-on are no longer there. And it's only those that are really committed that are there. This is what happens in exile. It's strengthened. The church becomes stronger. And there comes with it a clarity of purpose and vision that is absolutely crystal clear. And you see this in Nehemiah when they go back to rebuild the city of Jerusalem. That exile community then has a clarity of purpose. This is what needs to be done. This is how we can go about doing it. And amazing things can be done from this small group with the kind of influence that's there. It's similar in some ways to what the early church was when it's not part of the majority community, which is what the majority culture or Christian culture. Well, what does this have to do with missions at Urbana? Well, I'd like to submit to you that the community of God in exile, the people of God in exile, have a lot more in common with the pilgrim church that we see in other parts of the world than when we were a majority culture of Christians who came from strength and a position of power. We too are a minority. We too are struggling against a culture that speaks and that works against us. And we too then have something that's in common with what's happening in the rest of the world. And does that not say that maybe this next generation of missionaries will be able to do things in significant ways that the past generations weren't able to do? We're not able to do a generation that will do a better job with the emerging church in the world than past generations have. And how can we equip them, this broken generation? How can we equip them to face the problems that Duane looked at, if Wheaton College is facing, that the university staff are facing every day with the brokenness and the problems and the sin and issues that are in the world? And with this brokenness and lack of Christian understanding and biblical knowledge, will we have a generation of missionaries that drifts from the truth and is morally compromised, or one that can, in their weakness, rely on God and minister in a way that past generations couldn't? And I believe the latter, because I believe in God. I believe that God is raising up His generation and is doing His work amongst people. You know, when I was studying, and several of the different times that I've had a go at that study, we were looking at the whole issue of scripture and culture. And there was an example in Africa where there were communities in Africa who we would normally consider heretical. They would have ideas of syncretism that sort of tie into their traditional culture. They would look only at the Old Testament. Many of them would claim to be descendants of the lost tribes of Israel. They would say, well, we're one of the 10 lost tribes, and we've settled here in Africa. This is who we are. And off they go. And you see that actually in a lot of different places in the world. And Christians could come in and be distressed at what was happening there. But they discovered something, that in a general trend, that if Scripture was translated and in the language of that culture and that group of people, within 60 to 70 years, they were well within Christian orthodoxy. Why? Scripture. They read Scripture. They believed it was the revelation of God, and on the basis of that, understood it, and they're taking the whole counsel of God. And in time, those, quote, heresies disappear, and the central truths of Scripture come in and reside in those communities. That is what we want to do at Urbana. That is what we want to do at Urbana with this particular, with new culture. We want to give Scripture to a generation and empower them to interpret it. This is the revelation of God for you to interpret and understand, because God will speak to you through that Scripture. He doesn't have to speak through us, but He can speak through His Word to you. And we can trust God for this generation, and we can show them Scripture. That's why there's this huge effort that we've put into doing a manuscript study and doing the Dickens. I don't know if all of you are aware of what the plan has been, but it's been to train InterVarsity staff in leading something that InterVarsity does well, which is these manuscript studies, of coming to the text, asking questions of the text, understanding it in a variety of different ways, and then coming up with questions and seeking to answer those questions in terms of applicability in their own lives. And so there's a process that people go through. InterVarsity loves the Bible and does this well. We're looking at the book of Ephesians, and we want the book of Ephesians to permeate the movement and to permeate Urbana and to touch the lives of the people there. And so InterVarsity staff all over the country have been having these dig-ins, three to three and a half, four days, where they've been studying in depth the book of Ephesians and allowing it to affect and learn from them. And as we come up to Urbana, we trust that that will continue. Next week in chapel, Lucy from the Urbana team, who's been responsible for organizing a lot of this Urbana dig-in, will be leading a way of doing manuscript study. And so even if you've done it before, if you've not done it, here's an example of how it's being taught. And there's a way to learn on that. It won't be on Ephesians, because we like to do Ephesians as a whole. We are planning to do, and we're not sure exactly how we're going to execute it, but we would love to be able to offer Ephesians in this way of study for the whole of the NSC. It may need to be in departments and in other places, but we would like to do that as we come closer to Urbana. So that's part of our plan. So watch out for that, and if you would like to participate in that and learn, you can. It's not the same as going away on a dig-in. I've been in a dig-in. You learn a lot when you go for 3 or 4 days and just really give yourself to it rather than doing it on a week-by-week basis. And I know the 2100 has done it both ways. They've done it week-by-week, and they've gone away on a dig-in to learn about Ephesians. But that is the theological basis for why we're doing Scripture this way. We believe Scripture will speak to this generation. It will transform the brokenness of this generation. And the strengths that come from weakness and being in a minority culture are those things that can communicate the world. We believe that one. The second major theme that I wanted to look at was the whole issue of calling. How is it that we understand calling? Now, we have a theme for Urbana. We have a calling. It comes from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1, where it says, as part of the verse, live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Live a life worthy of the calling you have received. It isn't you'll get a calling, you'll find a calling. It's a calling that you've already received. It's there. And the point of it is for students to step up to it. The four objectives of Urbana, which you can see in here, have not changed really over the course of the history of this convention. And they are to declare God's character and mission as revealed in Scripture, inform about the current realities and global missions, call all participants to join God's mission, and motivate participants to serve in global and cross-cultural missions. Now, this is the thing that struck me as interesting when we were drawing these up, when we were sort of re-expressing them in slightly different words, but the principles are here. These last two, call all participants to join in God's mission and motivate participants to serve in global and cross-cultural missions. And I thought, what do we do at Urbana? What have we been doing at Urbana? We've been calling or trying to call participants to serve in global and cross-cultural missions, and we've been motivating people to participate in God's mission. And that really has been probably the message of Urbana. What we want to do is say every single person that is Urbana is part of it, at Urbana is a part of God's mission. If you are a believer in Jesus Christ, you are part of God's mission. You can step up to it or not. That's up to you. But you're called to it, and you're involved in it. And the whole world is your concern. You may not be there, but it's your concern, and we're to be involved. And then our motivation is to expose people so that they see parts of things that they haven't seen before, and may very well be called of God to go into those into that kind of service. We're looking at the whole nature of call and what we're asking students to respond to, and we haven't come to firm conclusions on this yet. What are we going to do? We have the card that you put off. People fill that out, and then it comes back. And I think that that's very helpful, and my guess is we'll probably do it again. But there's more to call than that. And how is it that students experience that? How is it that participants experience that and know it in this culture? We've given a lot of thought to the elements of call and the discussion on that. And there's some things that have been written out on this that I was looking at recently. And then we had this plenary advisory group that Lucille was leading, I think, what was it, last Saturday, a week ago Saturday, and a group of people here. And so we were discussing and trying to get information for each of the plenary sessions on the different days, table by table. And there was a huge interest in the nature of call, tying it to identity. I thought, man, you know, we don't have this in here. It's in it in one way, but it came out very, very strongly with this particular group about identity. Someone is called. Some person needs to be called. And I thought, you know, it's not rocket science. It's really clear. And the more authentic the identity of the person who's being called, the greater the ministry potential is. You know, who is it? It's all of you being called. There's only that part of me that relates to this particular group. And I hear it. Actually, there's another persona that's over here that's sort of existing on the side. But what is it that's an integrated person that stands before God? John 13, 3 through 5 says, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. Jesus knows who he is, and that he had come from God, and that he was going to God. He knew where he came from, he knew where he was going, and he knew what he had here. So, and after doing a manuscript study, you would underline that word so, and you would point it out real carefully, because that's a really critical word here, and it tells you something about this passage. So, got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist, and after that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Now, why could Jesus do this ministry and his disciples not do it? A lot of it related to knowing exactly who he was before God. And as he knew that, and his identity was crystal clear, so he could be called to minister. So that then becomes a part of our mission, Interbana, in terms of communication. Another thought that comes in call us, I've tried to think about it in a general way, is that there's a way in which we talk about Urbana. The challenge has been to go, or sometimes people would say to come, if somebody comes from overseas, to come and join us, and I think that that's very important, or to give. Students have been very generous in the offering, $1,139,000 students gave at the last offering in Urbana 2003, enormous amounts. It's their challenge to give sacrificially. But there is another way in which, how is it that we as Christians can be involved in other ways? And we're looking at that and trying to think about it. And one of them is advocacy. One of the reasons that we're working hard to see if we can't get Bono to come. I don't know if we're going to be able to do it or not, but we're going to keep trying. And the point of it is that there are things that we as Christians step out to do. Call is as much about our stepping into the world as it is about asking others when we are calling people to faith, as we're asking others to step out of it. John 17 and 15 through 18, Jesus prays for his disciples. And it's not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. They're not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth. And as you sent me into the world, so I send you into the world. And how do we as people find out what are these issues out here? And as Christians, step up and say, we have something to say there too. And it brings evangelicals onto the map in this country, into the news, and into the world in a helpful way. That's one thing that happens. But it's our responsibility as believers to say, yes, we have something to say there too. And that too is part of call. So we're trying to understand this in a broader, more full context. And we're still working on it, so we're not there. But these are some of the thoughts that are coming from behind that. Now, I was on a plane going up to Canada just this last week, and the leg that went from Madison to Chicago is a very short one. You're only in the air about 20 minutes. And a young woman sat next to me she was quite talkative, and she was a PhD student from Stanford University, and was absolutely pleased as anything because her boyfriend was going to move out with her and live with her in Stanford, and she had been visiting this boyfriend here, and this was a happy time. But I pray and hope it works out well for her in understanding that obviously not getting married, and so there's an issue there. But we got into talk about Christianity, and she asked me about who I was and what I did, and told about InterVarsity, told about Urbana, told about the missions department and some of the things that were there. And as we were talking and going through this, we talked about this issue of advocacy, justice, and how Christians have a responsibility to step up, and we think that this is important. And she said, now that I can relate to. And when the conversation came to that, she told about her United Methodist background. She started to tell about her spiritual pilgrimage and who she was. But this was a point that hit with this generation. It was important for her to hear. Now, another thing that the Urbana team the missions department, I should say, would like to offer you, I don't know if you're aware that we have book discussions, or try to have book discussions monthly, or not monthly, but quarterly. Sometimes these drift into see a movie and discuss that. That's a lot easier than reading a book and they're going on, you know. But we've done that. We've done that a couple times. But we do have book discussions, and we've invited the National Service Center to participate in our next one. It's an Urbana Book of the Day by Gordon Smith. It's called Courage and Calling, and it relates to this issue of calling. And so we would love for all of you and more to participate. I think it's probably too late to get copies of the book if you haven't signed up for it. About 50 people have signed up for this book discussion. And Bob Freiling from IVP is coming down, and there's some of us who are fans of Bob Freiling. I'm one of them. He communicates very, very well on what some of the things are in the books, and I think he would lead a very, very interesting book discussion. So we would invite you to do that. And then, you know, if you have ideas about this, if you hear these talk and other things, you know, don't hesitate to pass on your ideas. You know, you may get them rejected and feel a little bad, but we really want to hear input, and don't hesitate to give it, because it's important for us to hear many things. So, for instance, if we're talking about go, give, and advocacy, that doesn't sound very well. So what do you do? Go, give, advocacy, or maybe you make it AA advocacy, and the same. And, you know, if you can help us with a better word and a concept, it might help us, because otherwise I'd be likely to come up with something like Rip Van Winkle again. There's a lot to understand about call, and we want to be led of God in how we present this, and it's really important. And I'll end with an illustration. We believe in this student generation, and I'll say this again, we believe that God is at work in them, and God is doing something different than he's done in past generations, and they have something to contribute to God's mission in the world today, and it's remarkable, and it's something that we don't understand. We might just be able to peep in and see it and understand it. People of my generation are looking at it. When I was in Cyprus, we had a young couple that came down. He was the accountant for our organization, and it was a couple with a history. You know, each of them had a history. They had all sorts of issues. They were converts late in life rather than early in life. They had a fairly late marriage, and you know, there was just sort of one sort of emotional crisis after another with them, in one way or another. I mean, issues that related them, and he got involved in the Anglican Church there when they were doing the Alpha Series and led the Alpha Series. They had 20 to 25 people who attended that first set of Alpha Series classes. The communication and the ability that this couple had to minister in that and see the changes that came was unbelievable. I would never have done that. It was from a retired British colonel in the military who sat and listened to this, to people that were his own age. God had given them a terrific gift. From another point of view, it seemed like there was an awful lot of issues here, you know, to try and get our office work done that we're working on. But God had done something remarkable in them. And I believe that that's true. I believe that that's true in this generation. Thank you very much.